All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we got a special guest in the studio with us, the virtual studio, the StreamYard, I guess it's called now, right?
The StreamYard studio.
Cleveland, Ohio. Sunny Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah. So we got Ryan from Cleveland, Ohio, coming from his corporate headquarters there.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we've got, Ryan O'Donnell from CellHack. And then Replyify. We're going to be talking with him today. He is the co-founder, CEO of two tech platforms used by thousands of companies, both large and small, for generating consistent sales pipeline. So we're going to be talking a little bit about how he's grown his company, a little bit about his two companies. And this should be interesting because both Sean and I, we've looked at your bio, read up on some of the stuff, your companies, and we're interested to learn more today and how you've grown those through direct marketing. So pleased to have you on.
Cool. Glad to be here. And for I guess, evergreen content purposes, this is a Friday. It is a summer Friday. that could happen to any of us. This conversation we booked it recently. Glad to meet you all. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So you said sunny Cleveland. So when I hear sunny and Cleveland, I don't usually put those two together. So is it sunny today in Cleveland?
It is. Tomorrow could be 32 in snow.
Yeah.
And then the day after that could be 50 in rain and then 80 and back to sun. So it's kind of random out here, but yeah, it's sunny for the time being.
Very good.
Well, it's just hot here. So I'm in Austin, Texas.
Down south.
So,
yeah. And Jonathan, where are you?
Knoxville, Tennessee. Yep. Right. Sean's in Austin, Texas. So,
Boston.
Austin. No,
I'm kidding.
Austin.
Some days it feels like it.
It feels like Boston. Yeah.
So before we get started, I'm really excited and a little curious on your businesses and, you know, why you saw the need for those and all that kind of stuff and kind of what they do. Because I know that's a big pain point for a lot of people. So a lot of our listeners as well. So I'm excited to get into that. But before we do, this is, after all, called Persuasion by the Pint. So we have some pint discussions to talk about. So, Ryan, did you bring something to the show beverage?
I did. Let me see if I can slip this down. Brooklyn Summer Ale.
Ooh.
It's summertime here. And I used to live in Brooklyn and miss it every day, but I moved back to sunny Cleveland, Ohio after our first son was born. Brooklyn's Brooklyn Summer Ale works in the golf course. So I played a couple holes this morning and you don't, it's a nice session ale.
Yeah. So is that Brooklyn Brewery?
It is.
I like their, they've got like a brown ale that's really good. I've had a couple
of
different
ones. Have we had one of those?
Too. I don't think we've had them on the show, but I've had them, several times and I like it. They're good quality stuff.
Yeah. They actually had the, one of the original IPAs before IPAs were even a thing. I bought a 4-pack of the Bengali IPA. Mm-hmm. Actually that's my 6-point. That's in Brooklyn too. I had no idea of the strength of IPAs. This was like 2007, right?
Yeah.
Like they hadn't even hit. And we took the subway to Coney Island. And I had four, thinking, all right, I've had four beers before. Before you knew it, I was like crawling on the sand. My wife's like, what are you doing? I had no idea. But 6-point makes a vicious Bengali Tiger IPA.
Oh, wow.
What do you got, Jonathan?
Well, I have a Fat Bottom Ruby American Red Ale.
All right.
I'm still learning this because I'm holding it the wrong way. Everything's reverse on this StreamYard.
Familiar.
So Fat Bottom, just to give you a little background, it's a 6-point, no, I'm sorry. I wish it was. It's like 5.1% ABV. a little high on the IBUs, 35. And it's from Fat Bottom Brewing Company. So pretty interesting. Red ale. Sean and I usually like the darker ales, but I'm starting to, as it gets into the summer, you don't see those as much. And so we're having to get either, we're not big IPA fans, but you go an ale or a lager or, just any kind of ales that aren't IPAs. It's okay. So
bro.
It's acceptable.
Cool.
Yeah. So while you're pouring that one, Jonathan, I've got, this is kind of cool. So this is one of my favorite breweries. It's Tupps Brewery, and they're up in McKinney, Texas, just north of Dallas. And it's called Dive Bar Brunch. A little bit of a glare there, but it's called Dive Bar Brunch. It's a imperial stout brewed with cold brew coffee, coconut, and cocoa nibs. Comes in at 9.8%. And but this is what's interesting. This is, it seems to be like a one-off, because on the back it says, the COVID-19 pandemic has hurt many in the food service industry, including local musicians who rely on those bars and restaurants to make a living. Proceeds from this can will go to support these two communities. So it's, and it's actually like printed on the can.
Wow.
So
that's pretty good. So
it's a whole marketing campaign.
Timely marketing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like so that. Pretty
it's
cool.
It's fresh. Though. You know
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly. you're not getting a beer from last year, right?
For sure.
Yeah. It's not a Budweiser.
Well, with that said, oh, I wanted to show you this, guys. Look at that head, man.
That's nice.
Ruby red. So let's see what you got there, Sean. That is super dark.
Yeah, well.
I'm going talk. Straight from the can to the koozie.
Oh, yeah.
To the face.
I like it.
There. Oh, is that a U.S. Open koozie? Is that
it is.
Awesome.
From way back.
Very cool. Well, cheers, guys.
All right. Cheers.
Salute.
So, thoughts. So, just to give you it, Ryan, we give a 1 to 5 pints on a 5 pint scale. How many pints do you give your beer, your IPA?
I would, it's an ale. It's a summer ale.
Oh, summer. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult you.
It's a nice light summer ale. Dude, my type of drinking depends on the season and the mood and in the place. I'd bust these out on a hot sunny day. This is a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Me. All right.
Man. Right. My palate is White Raja would be my kind of number one. Fathead also has a great IPA. Those are two local breweries. Those are 4 9s out of 5 on my scale.
Cool.
This Brooklyn Pale Ale, the summer ale is a 4 in my opinion.
That's good.
Cool.
That's high.
Yeah. Yeah. I may have to pick that up for next week.
No doubt.
All right. I'm giving mine a solid 4. By the way, this is the same, if you remember, Jonathan, like this is the same brewery that does the Full Grown Man series.
Yeah.
Full Grown Man Child, Full Grown Man, all those beers. So
okay.
It's good quality. So far, I have not been disappointed with Tupps, so I'll give it a solid 4.
Awesome. Another 4. Wow. We're rolling. Yeah,
good day.
Yeah. Well, this is, I'm not going to give this one a 4 quite, but this actually tastes a lot like, I don't know if you've ever been, Ryan, we have a, like in our area, and Sean knows because he used to live in the Knoxville area, but we have a place called Calhoun's, and I don't know if you ever had one of their Cherokee Red. It tastes a lot like that. So, which is, I like it. So, I mean, it's not a stout, not a porter, but it's a solid red ale. I'm going to give it a 3.8. So
there you go. Pretty good day on the old podcast. We've had some duds recently.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, we've had
any
some
Miller Lights. Any Miller Lights? I saw one of your last ones. I forget the guy's name because I went to the site after. Had had a cigar and a Johnny Walker.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that was
Rich.
Rich. Rich. Yeah,
yes,
Rich.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Rich Sheffern does not play. He just goes
straight to the big stuff. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Pappy.
Yeah.
The Pappy cigar.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
those were expensive. Yeah. I mean, that's nothing to play around with there, but.
All right. Well, let's dive in. You've already done the bio.
Yep.
But Ryan, if you want to kind of give a, we didn't go through the whole bio, but you started on Wall Street.
Yeah.
So you've been through the ultimate like sales boot camp, I guess.
Done probably it. Wall I've Street. Done it. Saturday afternoon.
Making 500 calls a day.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Dude, that's crazy.
Right now, postcards. This is before like any kind of prospecting systems, like writing on big, big post, 5x8 postcards on, we were on hoovers.com just looking for executives at companies, writing down name, title, company, phone number, and then Monday morning start dialing and, you know, try to get through the gatekeeper or you know, call them at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning, trying to see before the gatekeeper showed up to work, see if they're at their desk, get them on the phone, pitch them a local bank. Yeah. See if we can call them back. And it's crazy. I've done the cold calling and manual prospecting, and I'm on the complete other end of the spectrum now.
So I got between them, right? I gotta ask, like, what was your most successful line to get through the gatekeeper? Like, did you ever come up with like a thing that worked more consistently than others?
To get through the gatekeeper, the most successful way to get through the gatekeeper is to call before he or she is, you know, has either arrived at the office or left for the evening, and the exec is still there working.
Right.
That's the best time to get him.
Yeah. That's funny how that works. Yeah.
For sure.
All right. So tell us how you got here, you know, and then we'll just dive into kind of what you're up to and cool. Why you saw the need for it. And then we'll start riffing and we'll interrupt you and ask questions.
For sure. So I hated everything about being a stockbroker. I still have friends who are doing well, and the plan was you stick with it, you get a book of business and, you know, start to make money and sure. Blah, blah, blah. I knew I would never be in New York long enough to do that and just kind of like realize that. So I started looking for jobs after about a year. I always loved the internet marketing and ended up at one startup and then another startup. And then got recruited to a company that just raised a couple million bucks in funding called Right Media. And about a year after that, we sold to Yahoo. And, you know, I was 28 years old on an international business unit at Yahoo, you know, building up offices in, you know, Hong Kong, Singapore, London, traveling the world, having just, you know, selling and doing deals and loving life. And then Yahoo came back and I don't know how much I can talk about this. I don't think they care. but it was basically like move to a region or take a package. And I took a severance package, and this was like 2010 and Facebook was kind of like on the come up at that point.
Sure.
So, I found a guy I knew who built an application for Facebook for like group gifting, because I was like 27 at the time. And anyone who's 27 or has been 27 knows that like you go to a ton of weddings and you're like, God, when is this going to end? And then it ends and you're like, oh man, it'd be great, you know, to see some old friends at a wedding again. So I was in that phase and built an app for like group gifting. So a bunch of friends trying to buy like, you know, a new driver or an iPad for another, and like, you know, collecting funds kind of sucks. So how do you do that? So we like built this app, pivoted a few times, B2C, B2B, back and forth, raised some money, accelerator, you know, long story short, 2014 shook out. We closed the business and I was sitting having a beer. I was having a White Raja at a local bar, like right after within 24 hours after like officially closing the former company and saying, what do you want to do next? And I told my partner, I said, look, you know what sucks? Trying to do sales and prospecting from LinkedIn. And it's a manual, tedious process. I wasted a ton of time all week long doing this. And it'd be cool if I could do this.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, all right, how would you do this? And I showed him and he built it. And then we got a cease and desist from LinkedIn 2 weeks after that. And then the servers kind of blew up and we were on the map and, you know, we kind of got compliant and then just kind of bobbed and weaved from there to get us to this point. But long story short, I live at the top of the funnel, building software as a service, we haven't raised money. We don't want to raise money. We don't work with everyone. We like to pick our clients because we spend some extra time with them. And it's just, you know, we've got a bootstrapped, you know, what do you call it? Lifestyle business.
Yep.
That we're perfectly comfortable running and, you know, just stumbled through some bad mistakes, you know, chasing markets as opposed to like focusing on building something that is actually a problem for you, and learning that, you know, it's a much more authentic experience to deliver from a product and a support standpoint, just working with our clients is very authentic. That's just how we roll.
What was the, I'm just curious, what was that the cease and desist? What was that related to? I mean,
I don't know if I can really talk about that in too much detail either, but it was basically stop and don't do this anymore.
Sure.
we had a...
Too similar, I guess, you know. What?
Well, actually, I'll expand on that for a moment. So when I used to talk to clients, you know, we'd kind of, I'd put it to them with this analogy, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a remora who is the type of a small fish that rides on the back of a great white shark, and the remora keeps the shark healthy and eats all the algae and cleans its teeth and stuff. But anytime that the great white can, you know, come up and eat that remora, we were like that remora, right? Mm-hmm. We took a really good product from LinkedIn and, you know, we kind of took the approach that we never accessed data that we shouldn't have access to. Everything was publicly available, right? Mm-hmm. We just said, how do we take this product that LinkedIn can't give you email addresses for everyone, and they won't let you just download tons of data, or they would have a mass exodus.
Sure.
We did it initially, maybe a bit more aggressive a way than we should have done, but we've changed that after a particular run in. And now, you know, I joke to some of our clients, it's like, I'm probably in the bottom 5% of LinkedIn salespeople, with regards to how many Sales Navigator accounts I've closed over the years. Right. Because we give it teeth and make it effective and do it in a way that's kind of trustworthy across the platform.
Sure.
Cool. All right. So tell us about these, where the two businesses you have. You mentioned your bio CellHack and Replyify. They seems like they kind of work together, right?
They do. And they weren't started at the same time. I'm no Steve Jobs, right? we built CellHack to help with prospecting, and the output of CellHack's an email address with a confidence score, right? And it's list building and emails. You go to a conference and get a list that doesn't have emails, or you're prospecting online and, you know, on LinkedIn and or wherever, and need to get some email addresses for prospects and build a list. B2B salespeople is who we serve, right? Yep. So we built CellHack in 2014, and we, you know, our clients were getting a bunch of emails, and they were going out and saying, hey, you know, MailChimp won't let me send these emails anymore. They're not opted in. Or they would say, hey, I've, you know, I'm using my CRM to send emails, and it's just, it's not working. So we built Replyify in 2017, to automate the cold emails and follow-ups, right? So CellHack, you get the email addresses, Replyify connects your email account. And that's where you create a campaign sequence. So initially email one, hey, I'm Ryan. You know, here's why you're cool. Here's why I'm cool. Here's, you know, what I think we could do together. Let's set up a call. 5 days later, Ryan again, 10 days after that, hey, it's Ryan. You know, and the follow-ups, ideally the persuasion of the emails and the copywriting, which is very important to me, is more kind of complex and deliberate than what I just went through. But basically we run two SaaS applications that sit at the top of the funnel, for B2B salespeople. Mm-hmm. Right. And we help automate what historically were very manual and tedious tasks that people literally use Excel spreadsheets or, you know, and then, you know, fingers on the screen or eyes on the screen, fingers on the keyboard, you know, copy and pasting templates and sending emails one by one. It's just, time's a lot more valuable than that. Right.
So how does that show up? Like I'm sitting at my computer, I'm prospecting. So like, it's just pulling names from websites like that you're already searching and doing research on.
It depends. Back, I call it PC pre-COVID. When people went to conferences, right? You leave a conference, you get a spreadsheet, right? And that spreadsheet would have, you know, here's the 2,000, 10,000 attendees. you can pay it $6,000 and we'll give you all their email addresses and phone numbers, or you can just have the spreadsheet. So if someone's got a spreadsheet of like 2,000 names, they can just upload that to CellHack. CellHack takes the first name, the last name, the company name, and does all the testing and verification. So pings the mail servers, looks at historical patterns, crawls the web, checks social, looks at a bunch of databases. Based on the, you know, the positive, negative, or neutral hits that we get, we return an email address with a confidence score, right? So that's the file upload. Alternatively, there's a Chrome plugin, so you could be searching on any of your, you know, favorite social media sites, looking for your prospects, and open the plugin and get the emails that way, right? None of the data is necessarily kind of scraped from those servers. It's all validated in real time. So no fixed databases. Everything's valid in real time.
Okay.
That's CellHack.
Very cool.
And see, Replyify is just like the, it's kind of an extra layer of email so that you're not using your ISP and stuff for your.
Well, it is using your ISP. So the difference between us and something like MailChimp or Constant Contact or Campaign Monitor.
Yeah.
So in Replyify, when you get an account, you create a sequence. So initial, you know, email one, wait 5 days, email two, wait 10 days. You connect your email address, right, using your SMTP and IMAP credentials. So if you're G Suite or Office 365 or custom mail server, you connect your mail server to Replyify and then add your contacts. You can either import them from CellHack or just upload them directly or pull them in from Salesforce, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Replyify sends out the emails using your mail connection. So the sent emails are in your sent folder, right? One of our kind of core tenets is like automation should never look automated.
Right.
And yeah, we weren't the first cold email platform on the block. We used to, at CellHack, we had partnerships with, you know, with several of like the first wave. We built Replyify because we heard our clients complaining about them. And we kind of took like the best of what we wanted it to be and kind of made it into what we wanted it to be. And I was joking with my business partner today, my co-founder, that, we don't work with everyone, you know, sure. And we're kind of proud of that. And I told him today, I don't know if he ever knew that. I was like, dude, you know, we were just talking through, I don't know, just geeking out on the golf course about work stuff. And I was just talking him through like how I start calls, how I start sales calls, which we can get into later if you guys want to needle on that. I've got this is fresh in my head.
Sure.
But I basically was like kind of walking him through what like a typical sales call was like. And, you know, I was telling him like, I take the position, I tell people like, if we don't want to work with you, we don't, like, we're not desperate. I don't have a VC who's requiring data. Like, we're bootstrapped,
right?
Have been for the last 7 years. Have no interest in outside capital at this point. And like, if I don't like your business model because you're a spammer, or I think you might be, and you might have negative implications for the platform, like, we don't need your $100 a month or whatever. Or if you're just a jerk, like if you're rude to me, or especially if you're rude to someone on my team, like, we block you on intercom. We close your cancel and refund your Stripe account, and like your IP is blacklisted on our server. We like to work with people who are serious about what they're doing and like serious about being committed to, like, you know, improving as a person as a salesperson, as a sales leader.
That's persuasive in and of itself, because it's like the fact that you're not interested in everybody makes it, you know, it seems like you're kind of exclusive. So, you know, I think it just kind of puts the onus on your prospects to kind of sell them, you know, to you instead of the other way around, you know.
It's amazing. And I said that thing to, I was like, dude, I have not, like, this process is maybe 6 months old in terms of like taking this position. Like, people used to be like, well, how do you compare to like this company who's raised $30 million and, you know, I used to have like the stock response of like, well, you know, we're everything you need and nothing you don't. Like, you don't need a user manual that thick to like learn our product. We built it for people like you. But throwing in the that, you know, when I just kind of talk through in terms of like, we don't work with everyone and we're not like, you're talking to me, one of the co-founders. You're not talking to like some guy they just hired who like needed a sales job and like the sales team had like two open recs. So they hired him. Like, you're not talking to that guy. You're talking to someone who's like, who's built this and, yep, and has lived here for a while. And I think that, being authentic like that, you know, it helps. It's been helping us to actually close more business, and the right kind of business, yep, right? Like, yeah, our churn has started to go down just over the last 6 months.
Yeah. And that's a huge, like, that's a huge shift from the way you would have sold on Wall Street, for instance. And was that a difficult shift for you, or are you just tired of doing it the old way? And like, you just kind of came to the conclusion, like, I just need to, like, how did you make that shift? You said it was pretty recent. So I'm curious about that.
The tricky part about having a small company is there are pros and cons. Pro is when I wake up in the morning, 6 or 7 a.m., right? I start working. I don't shower till like noon, 1, right? I work, and yep, my kids get up around like, you know, in the summer, they get up around 7:30 or so. And I get an hour and a half of work in, and then I get to hang out with them for a little bit.
How old are your kids, by the way?
And 3, 5, and 8.
Wow. Okay. So all right. So wait till they get to be teenagers. They won't be getting up at 7.
They might be out that door here in a minute. Oh, they will. It'll be a lot easier. Like, it, now you have to be like actively engaged with everything.
Right.
Yeah. That'll go away.
Do you have older kids?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sean and I both have older kids. So, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Mine are teenagers. His are in their, I guess, what, 20s now? Or soon to be. Yeah.
Yeah. 19 and 25. Yeah. So
what?
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't want to say you look good, but you look good for having a 19-year-old. I can tell you that. You
and did. A 25-year-old too.
Yeah, and 25-year-old. Good amazing. Man. Good man.
Yeah. So yeah, no, it's all the jelly beans and Coke I drink that's preserving me.
All good.
So you know, I love your model because my background is in corporate sales. And you know, I talk about like I've worked for companies in the past where, you know, you have a, we use the SaaS, you know, obviously SaaS software to, for sales, and it's good and, you know, it's great, but it was always controlled by the marketing. And that was a frustration. You know, marketing is like, okay, we'll do our little email campaign through that. And it's like, no, it's not, you know, cause I've always been a student of marketing and sales, not just selling. And, sure. It was like, you guys aren't doing it near the way that I would do it. So I always was, you know, I was kind of always trying to do an end around, you know, marketing and their efforts with that and setting up my own platforms. And I love what you've done with the, with this Reply-ify because it,
And Jonathan, you're more high touch. I mean, you definitely automation should not look automated. You're big on that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So. It's really important. And that's one of the first things that we built in was, you know, when you're building out a campaign sequence, you know, every email provider, and we're not the only ones in the block. And I don't want to turn this into a big, like, you know, promotion for the company. We'll talk like practice in, mm-hmm. in general. But one of the things that we wanted to build in was not just having the cookie cutter option where everyone gets the same email, except for, you know, hi, insert name. I saw you were a insert title at insert company and lived in insert city. Right. So when you build out a campaign, you can have a template that looks like that. And that's perfectly fine. That's like the most common type of template, mm-hmm. but we also have manual emails, which allow the sender to customize each email. So you can create it like a partial template, but before, and they usually use this in like the initial email in a sequence. So the first email is a manual email. So inside of Reply-ify, you've got the ability to actually edit that email, add your connection statement, your custom this, your custom that, really put your best foot forward. That's your first email. And then after that, the 4 or 5 subsequent kind of follow-up emails, those can all be automated.
Right.
Right. And that's where it really starts, where we see people have a ton of successes. you know, kind of hyper personalization at the onset, just to signal that, hey, I'm not a random person. I didn't just buy your list. Like I'm targeting you, right? Like you're a perfect fit. Put that foot forward, and then, you know, just make sure you're continuing to follow up with them, especially during the, you know, this kind of quarantine time. Mm-hmm. Our business, we contracted about 15% month one. I'd say we're up 20%. Mm-hmm. from that point, or 20% from where we were before then. So like,
yeah,
people are realizing that, you know, there's a lot more folks at home right now, and cold calling, the establishment of cold calling, while I'm not saying it's not effective, it's complementary to cold emailing, just as it is to having a social selling mindset where you're connecting with people and sending in mails and stuff like that. I think the most successful people we see are doing all three of those.
Yeah.
They're picking up the phone. They've got emails that are kind of in between the phone calls, and the emails tend to be kicked off once the LinkedIn connection request gets made. Mm-hmm. Right. And then there's some follow-ups there. Like that's where we see B2B salespeople absolutely crushing it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, a multi-channel approach. What do you say to people who say that email is kind of dead and doesn't work anymore? Do you have any of that in the B2B space, or is that more of a...
That's a perfect example. If someone said that to me, that's...
You know they're not B2B.
Well, where we started kind of at the beginning of this call, like that's someone to whom I would say, I don't think we're a fit. Yeah. If you'd like, here's, you know, I'll send a follow-up email and a link to the pricing page, but, you may be better suited. And I've actually sent people to our competitors in the past, particularly people that I haven't liked. I've sent them elsewhere. I'm like, you're going to be better suited there. Let them deal with it. I don't think email's dead. I mean, come on. When will email ever die?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Until then.
Yeah. Until then, we keep
hearing that it has. On. We've heard it for the last, 8 years, I think, that email's dead.
Yeah. It's probably the social media propaganda machine that's promoting that lie.
That's not, don't bait me. Don't take me down. Don't take me there.
I want to learn more, a little more. I want to touch on the sell hack, because I think that's a fabulous, I think that's a great tool for anybody that's in sales. So you talk about being able to get email, you know, because I know that's a frustration. Being in, my background in sales, being in sales, you know, being able to find who your target prospect, you know who it is, but you can't get their email. And you know, they're, right. Like you said, you know, they're on LinkedIn, but it's so hard unless you're using LinkedIn Pro, and sometimes they don't respond. You know, sometimes that's not a platform that they're responsive to on a regular basis. And so you know, you're always trying to find how to contact them, and you don't have that information. So to me, this is a perfect tool. So what you're saying is this tool, using your, you know, I guess the Google Chrome browser, if you're using that, it's a simple plugin. And with any social media network that you're a part of, you can find that person's email.
Yeah. It doesn't matter where it's from. So CellHack turns out corporate email addresses based on the input of a first name, a last name, and a company.
Okay.
And that can come from anywhere. It can come, like I said earlier, a company spreadsheet, any social media site, just someone's website.
Sure.
You've done it. Folks who are listening have done it. You can find someone's email with enough kind of work, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Our position is the amount of time that you're spending going to five different sites, trying to figure out the website, or running three or four different searches on Google. And it's a huge waste of time.
Right.
So if you're doing like, you know, and we've seen it anywhere from like 2 to 5 minutes per contact in terms of like copy and pasting the name and the title and the company and the, you know, finding the email address and getting that into like a spreadsheet or a CRM, you know, 2 to 5 minutes per contact. So, you know, we've got clients, a lot of our clients kind of average, you know, 100 to 300 to 500 contacts a day, mm-hmm, right? two times 100, like that's, you know, 3-4 hours of your time is wasted doing what, right? Doing something that, you know, this other system is going to be able to do in a couple of minutes, you know, 300 contacts, maybe 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're spending $100 a month, $50 a month, depending on your volume. Like, how does that not make sense?
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Like we live in the world of automation.
Sure.
And look, I'm biased here in talking just because I run some of these companies, but just in general, like for B2B salespeople, growth marketers, whatever, I know folks are like, you know, they get to the point where they're like, oh God, I have so many tools and so many, you know, subscriptions of this or that. And it's like, well, take all those tools away, like extrapolate that, what that tool did for you and put it into like real time and track yourself. And then do the analysis back and say, okay, is it worth me spending $300 a month for like 7 tools to save 40 hours a month, right? To save a full work week. And I'd say, yeah.
Most companies would say yes in a heartbeat if they're smart. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. It's outside of my world. I've been working from home, and like a lot of my clients are very small clients, and I know who to contact. I've been doing copywriting and consulting and coaching, that kind of stuff. So it's much smaller data bases, I guess. That's what I usually go for. But
are you a content guy? Did I read that?
No, content? I mean, no, I do more sales.
Okay.
Sales copy.
Got it.
Yeah. So,
but I've been I've been in B2B for the last 20 years. Ryan, and this is fantastic. I've got your number on your email, and I'll be reaching out to you next week because this looks amazing. So,
and for the folks who are listening, if we can get in the show notes, we got a free course that we'll want to get linked in the show notes for anyone. It's a 7-day email based course. It's going to go into a heck of a lot more detail than what we're able to kind of touch on here today, but it's going to kind of take you through from like day zero. From recognizing, hey, I'm in B2B sales, whether I like it or not, and I need to figure out a way to, you know, proactively reach out to prospects and do some outbound, all the way through to like getting this, at least the bare bones of the system set up. Mm-hmm. So I'll get that link over to you guys. You can put them in the show notes.
That'd be great. Yeah.
And it's got some teeth in there. I think folks will dig it.
Now, in terms of for the sell hack, is is the pricing plan based off of the number of emails, or how does that work? How do you guys set up pricing for your customers?
Per month, right? Okay. So sell hack has different plans based on however many emails you need.
Sure.
Reply-ify is more of like a per seat model based on how many contacts you'd be reaching out to, just to kind of put it in nice round numbers. Mm-hmm. If you as a salesperson or consultant or business owner or whatever the heck you want to call yourself, if you need to reach out to people that you've never met before or haven't engaged with in a while to do some business with them, if you're looking for roughly 1,000 contacts a month to like find their email addresses and then be able to like send them, you know, an initial cold email and then 5 follow-ups, for example, you're looking around $100 a month all in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of going back to the, you know, 2 minutes times 1,000 to absolutely get all that information. And then, you know, if you've ever sent out a prospecting email to someone you've never met, it's not that hard. And some people get really creative with like copy and pasting little snippets that they have. And it's like, but even the amount of time that you're like clicking in your inbox, not to mention like following up at a certain frequency or having analytics, like, dude, that stuff's for the birds. Right. You know, I personally spend thousands of bucks a month on automation systems that we use, just because if not, I'd be spending another $12,000 on headcount.
Yeah.
And
yep.
You know, that's the argument to make for folks.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think about that, like $100, you know, let's say for 1,000, even a small guy like me who does more, you know, it's not, it is B2B, but it's pretty small. I don't do a lot of prospecting. It's a lot of word of mouth, things like that. But it would obviously radically change my business if I was reaching out to 500 to 1,000 people a month. I could get better quality clients, better, you know, higher prices, probably all those kind of things. And for $100, that's cheaper than I can do Facebook ads. That's cheaper than I can do, you know, a lot of stuff. So it's a,
and you can run them together for sure. And for the folks around here who are like, you know, anyone listening who's sitting here thinking, hey, I'm not in sales, like not for me.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. I'd say our primary use case is like top of the funnel B2B sales, right? Initial prospecting. Our second most kind of common use case is the marketing team or the director of growth or chief revenue, or, you know, someone who reports to the chief revenue officer, who's a salesperson just for follow-ups, right? Mm-hmm. Where the marketing person might send out an email blast from their marketing automation system that says, hey, we got a conference coming up. Are we going to see you there? We're going to be, you know, it's got pictures and no text, just a big block image that gets sent out, right? Or a webinar coming up or a forum or this or that. And it's like, we've seen a lot of salespeople kind of take those emails that the marketer is sending and creating like a 2 or 3 step email sequence that just says, hey, I don't know if you saw the message from, you know, Susan to marketing, but we got a webinar coming up next week. I think you'd really be a good fit for. Or, hey, are you going to be at, you know, LeadsCon this year or CES? Yeah. And then 20 days after that, which happens to coincide with like a day before LeadsCon, it's like, you know, about to get on a plane for Vegas, you know, see you at whatever. It's just like you. So all this stuff that like most salespeople are just, especially the ones who are burdened with prospecting and closing and then like the account management and upselling and all that, like anytime you have to reach out to someone and send them an email and you might want to follow up with them in case they don't reply to you, like there's 100 different use cases.
Sure.
For using that. So the course that we're going to link you guys to, that is actually like, it's a Replyify campaign. You're going to get the emails that you get are going to come from me. And it's a campaign that once you put your name into your email address in the form that we'll link you to, that there's a webhook that sends it over to Zapier, to Replyify and triggers all this automation happening. So hopefully it's seamless, but, you know, automation eats the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've managed some sales teams in the past, and I know follow-up is like the first thing to get cut. And all those things you mentioned, you know, follow-up is the first thing to get cut. And it's where a lot of the money is.
60% of the replies are going to come from emails 2 through N. You know, the majority of replies are going to come from them. Most people give up after email 1.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, especially with the LinkedIn connection, the most successful kind of campaigns that we see are search on LinkedIn, connect on LinkedIn, send message, automatically drop into a campaign and reply if I, you know, 3 days later kicks off the message that says, hey, you know, Ryan here from Replyify, sent you a connection request on LinkedIn, a little self-deprecation, you know, from the persuasion standpoint. I know that not everyone checks LinkedIn on a daily basis, so I wanted to follow up via email, right? And those just, if you pick up the phone on top of that,
that's awesome. That's great.
That's the machine.
So what, I'm just curious, you know, obviously most of your business that you get is B2B. Is there any particular industries that you work more closely with, or is it just a kind of a big smorgasbord of different companies and different industries?
It's a smorgasbord. I'd refine it a bit by saying we work with a lot of agencies and consultants, like people who run sales or lead gen or top of the funnel for other companies. Mm-hmm. Whether those companies are just lacking in having the human power to execute on it, and they just or just kind of maybe behind the times and just not privy to like sales 2 or 3.0.
Right.
So a lot of agencies, B2B, you know, we're a tech company, we're a SaaS company. So like whenever, like our DNA is all over the product.
Yeah.
So if you're like B2B software as a service or like tech, marketing, advertising, like you're going to get it. Like things are going to resonate with you. Yeah. If you're like B2B selling, I don't know, like personal protection, you know, PPE, like it might not be like that intuitive or like built for you, but like, agencies, people like us, B2B software companies are probably our kind of, most, you know, most rapid client base. But dude, we've got clients. I have a client who's, gosh, where are they from? New Zealand. It's mm-hmm. They're Cuddlist. They're B2B Cuddlist. They sell their service to go into companies and embrace, offer a warm embrace to people who may need a warm embrace, right? It's a wow. B2B company though. Wow. But all the way through to like the, at one end of the spectrum, all the way through to like, you know, we got sales guys from Oracle who, you know, probably make an additional 60 grand a month just on automating
sure.
the sales process. So for them to pay $100 is like, you know, they're sending yeah. me money and Pappy Van Winkle cigars. I wish.
If
you guys
right.
hear this, if that you guys hear nice. This, right.
That's cool. No, I got some ideas turning in my head. I'll have to think about that for my own prospecting, but yeah, it's good stuff. So, well, we're running short on time. My beer's gone. So that's always kind of the end of the show.
I like it too. So. Monday morning, I'm going to start my day maybe with a breakfast beer.
Yeah.
And when my beer is gone, I'll record my calls that day.
Yeah.
And I'll end the first call with the first call that I don't like. I'll tell my beer's gone.
Yeah. Sorry. Beer's gone.
I love it. And so are we.
Yes.
Well, so. That's amazing. Sinatra. You can start a Monday with a breakfast beer.
If it's on the golf course, I could, because I walk on the course and it's vacation.
So yeah, it sounds like you spend a lot of time out there. I mean, do you use? I'm just curious. Do you use golf as kind of a relationship? You know, to build relationships with clients, or is that just more of a de-stressor?
Both, all the above. It's a place where my business partner and I can meet up. We work remotely, so mm-hmm. it's where we can kind of commonly meet.
Cool.
I bring clients out there. I belong to a golf club, right? It's not like a kind of like bougie over the top club. It's just like, yeah. there's a bunch of like good golfers there mm-hmm. and families. It just fits in really nice with me. I'm humble and,
sure.
and kind of low key,
yep.
but still like, you know, you get it. I like to golf when I want to golf.
Yeah.
Every time I golf, if I meet someone new, like I met someone from Iron Mountain, like the security storage company. I golfed with them last week and I'm always,
that's
I'm
great.
Always trying to do business gently.
Yeah.
And then I don't take a ton of clients out mm-hmm. just because our clients are global.
Sure. Yeah. So you're doing business online mostly.
Right. Transactions happen primarily online, but mm-hmm. From personal stress, kind of like that's my happy place. That's where I go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Ryan Jonathan probably won't mention, but he's actually author of a book about selling.
I know, on man.
Grain. Did you research?
Yeah, tell me about that real quick and whatever time we have left. Give me the
so here's a key takeaway. My co-author, Tim Davis, if you want to get people strike up a conversation on a golf course, wear some. Go to loudmouthgolf.com and order you some of these Argyle khakis or Argyle pants. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to Loudmouth, but it's like this, you know, John Daly. I don't know how familiar, you know, John yeah, Daly, he sure. wears these things, but I'm actually going to order me a pair of Pabst Blue Ribbon pants. They have some PBR pants okay. that I'm going to start wearing out to the golf course just to get a conversation started.
Interesting.
And my co-author Tim Davis does that all the time. He likes the paintball splash look that looks like somebody shot him with a paintball gun. And so he'll wear those, and I've been out golfing with him before, and you know, people just walk right up to him and start a conversation. So I mean, it's pretty cool.
I say the more hands you shake, the more money you make.
That's right. Right? Every time.
Yep.
Right. Every time. But that's my key takeaway from that, because it's Tim's taught me a lot there in personal branding.
Cool.
Yeah. So my number one takeaway from this show, though, is automation should never look automated.
That's right.
Amen. We have a similar thing when I wrote copy. A tactic known is a tactic blown.
Mm-hmm.
And the same idea, like if you keep using the same tactic over and over, especially with the same person, you're going to get, you know, it's going to start to look cheesy and unprofessional. But making your automation not look automated is key. So sounds like these tools can help. So Ryan, we appreciate having you on.
Pleasure, fellas. Thank you.
Yeah, and please send us that link. We'll get it out in the show notes. And again, that is Ryan O'Donnell. He is the CEO and co-founder of SellHack and Replyify. We'll be posting links to those. Ryan, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks for joining us and sharing more about. Like I said, I've got your number, and I'll be touching base with you next week.
Cool. Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who made it through this.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it. Thanks again.
Take care.
See you.